You never lost the room. Never lost the room, I didn't think. Never lost the room, so, you know, I'm not sure.
So you say it was a surprise. So obviously players weren't given a heads up that this might happen. Like, you woke up yesterday and heard the news type thing?
I woke up to a text, like probably a lot of you guys did as well. You know, I know the narrative out there, obviously. You know, but it couldn't be further from the truth.
All right, it's Monday night on the Fan pregame, Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ailish and Justin. That was Connor McDavid, and we're going to get into all of his comments because that's the lead story of the night. We'll have Merrick Monday. We're crowning it Merrick Monday. In about 5 minutes, Jeff Merrick will join us. We'll do a little whip around the NHL, Hockey Hall of Fame induction night as well. Katie Heindel will join us around 6:30. Raps Wizards tonight, back home from a long road trip. And Gene Principe will join us at the end of the show to get that pulse on Edmonton. But you heard it. That was Connor McDavid speaking about the end of the Jay Woodcroft era. Chris Knobloch now in. The elephant in the room, though, is that people are referring to Connor McDavid as McGM.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to explain McGM to the listeners, Justin?
I'm not calling him McGM.
You laughed when I said it earlier.
But I guess, yes, I did. I guess the reasoning behind it is that Jeff Jackson is pulling all the strings. And, of course, Jeff Jackson and Connor McDavid have a very long relationship. A lot of eyebrows were raised when the Oilers signed Jeff Jackson to basically run the franchise after Ken Holland's tenure ends. And it means a lot. I mean, I think Frank Saravelli came on our show and said 95% chance he believes McDavid and Draisaitl will stay in Edmonton because Jeff Jackson, the guy who's been basically in charge of Connor McDavid's hockey career since he was 15 years old as his agent, is running the Oilers now. And then that was a really, really important hire, maybe a landmark hire in all of the NHL because it you know, points to or pivots towards something that is a bit different, and that's player empowerment and organizations basically putting themselves in a position where they can placate or best endear themselves, we'll put it, to the athlete that is most important to the franchise. And no one embodies that more than McDavid. As it comes to Jay Woodcroft, though, Jeff Jackson makes the decision, not Ken Holland, we believe, to fire Jay Woodcroft. And for that reason, you immediately pointed towards Connor McDavid and think, hey, did Connor McDavid want Jay Woodcroft gone?
And there's also the idea that Connor Brown was a free agent pickup, who was someone that Connor McDavid knew well. Obviously, the Oilers president, Jeff Jackson, as you mentioned, now a new head coach. So those three things have become, well, maybe Connor McDavid is either pulling the strings. And I don't believe that that's the case, but I do believe that the Edmonton Oilers are doing their best to want to make this an environment that Connor McDavid will want to stay in when his contract expires in 2 years. This has been an atrocious start for the Edmonton Oilers. Anything you can do at this point to make your superstar the best player in the NHL, or supposedly, at this point, the Edmonton Oilers are not even close to being a playoff contender. Whatever you can do to make him happy, to make him feel more comfortable, don't you think that any NHL team would do that? I just don't think that Connor McDavid's, you know, behind the scenes, like, you must fire Jay Woodcroft, or from my understanding of the way that he's responded to this. We played an audio clip off the top, and we have some more just conversation from Connor McDavid, who's like, I had no idea this was going on. He seemed really sidelined or blindsided, and we'll have, obviously, when we talk to Jeff and we talk to Gene later in the show, I think everyone is kind of corroborating that story. I don't know. I don't know what is – I'm just going from the information we have.
Yeah, and in the information we have, I mean, we're not going to really know, but I would be – I think we're all a little – we'd be all naive to think that Connor McDavid didn't know something was going on, especially with the relationship
with Jeff
Jackson.
The whole world felt like it was happening.
Of course, the greatest player in the world is going to be – at least given the heads up, I think, before it goes to the media or the text that he received. But I think that there are three options here with Jeff Jackson, the decision to get Jay Woodcroft and to go to Chris Knobloch, who coached Connor McDavid with the Erie Otters in the Ontario Hockey League. It's either there's consultation with McDavid, there's placating McDavid, just trying to make him happy, or it's just someone being Jeff Jackson, using the information that they have at their disposal to make the best possible decision. And that just might be simple as that, where it's like, okay, Knobloch and McDavid get along. We like Chris Knobloch. We think we need to change from Jay Woodcroft because it's not working. This is probably the best case scenario. It's probably a combination of all of that, but I do know that they're not making a decision with the coach to cross Connor McDavid. No. If Connor McDavid wanted Jay Woodcroft to be the head coach of the Edmonton Oilers, I find it very hard to believe that they would go the opposite direction.
His comments were that they, and he said that it was very, very honest today, that Jay Woodcroft had not lost the room. To me, that's a little bit of a comment to a guy that still had some control over the players and still was coaching in a sense that they wanted to listen and respect his thoughts. So he's no longer there, but who is here is Jeff Merrick, host of Jeff Merrick Show, 32 Thoughts, the podcast as well. Merrick, we're talking about the McGM wording around what's going on with Connor McDavid and just the Edmonton Oilers in general. We're not feeding into the McGM, but I think it's a funny saying. But in terms of what we've laid out here, just the connections, obviously you can follow the story of how Connor McDavid got to this point and who helped him get there. And there's a lot of, you know, relationships that are still present in Edmonton. Is there some sort of connection that is more than just coincidence at this point?
There's a couple of things here. One thing, you have to know the background of Jeff Jackson here. Mm-hmm. And make no mistake about it, and we saw this, there was a very public, symbolic passing of the torch yesterday when Jeff Jackson completely went against what Ken Holland said about talking to veteran players mm-hmm. and the decisions that were made. So this is very much Jeff Jackson's show to run now. It's the last year of Ken Holland's contract. What does he do after that? We're not sure. But this thing, like, Jeff Jackson has two hands on the wheel now with the Edmonton Oilers. And one thing you need to know about Jeff Jackson and Chris Knobloch, and I go back to the Memorial Cup in Windsor and having a conversation with Jeff Jackson about Chris Knobloch specifically. And he's had a number of clients play for Knobloch, both in junior hockey and in the American Hockey League as well. He's always been a big supporter of Knobloch. He's always gone out of his way to trumpet how good a coach he thinks Knobloch is. This is, you know, even outside of, you know, the few years that Connor McDavid had with him and with the Erie Otters. This is a Jeff Jackson play, I think, more than it is a Connor McDavid play. I think this is Jeff Jackson had a chance to bring in a coach that he's long wanted to make a head coach in the NHL. Someone he's believed in going back to the Erie Otters days. And don't forget, too, like Jackson, when he was with Orr Group / Wasserman, one of his key clients as well outside of Connor McDavid was Alex DeBrincat, who also, you know, will speak glowingly about this new coach here with the Edmonton Oilers. This is a Jeff Jackson call. Like, this is Jeff Jackson, and I suspect we'll start to see more of it tonight in this game against the Islanders. This is the Edmonton Oilers transitioning away from the Holland era into the Jeff Jackson era, and we'll see what happens with who the next general manager is, whether that happens in season, whether that happens after Ken Holland's contract expires at the end of the season. But I know everyone's pointing out, oh, McDavid is naming the general manager. Oh, McDavid's got his agent running the organization now. It's, you know, the almighty Connor McDavid, whatever Connor wants, Connor gets. Now, there is an element of truth to that historically in the NHL. Whether you're Mario Lemieux or whether you're Wayne Gretzky, generally some of the big conversations, you know, get passed along your way. But this is a Jeff Jackson call. Make no mistake about it, because this is one that Jackson's been talking about for years, both privately and publicly as well.
Yeah, 100%. So there's a little opportunism here from Jeff Jackson. I mean, this was a moment where you could make a coaching change. It was justifiable given the performance of this team. And if he's like Knobloch all along, I mean, this is an obvious move to go and shoot your shot, for lack of a better term, when you have the opportunity. It is interesting, though, transitioning from one era to the next in such a critical time for the franchise, the Edmonton Oilers, going from Ken Holland to Jeff Jackson just flat out running the show now. So I wonder, what do you think priority number two is for Jeff Jackson? One being winning hockey games. What's number two? Is it make Connor McDavid happy? Is it make Leon Draisaitl happy? What do you think number two is if you're going to prioritize what the objective is here for Jeff Jackson?
Well, I mean, make no mistake about it. The coaching change was in case of emergency, break glass moment. Right. Like Jay Woodcroft, like, I put it this way. There are a lot of coaches that are really nervous out there. Right. Like, look, I'll throw you an example. Like, you look at Lane Lambert tonight. I mean, it's Islanders and the Edmonton Oilers. In that game against Washington on Saturday, the fans at UBS are chanting fire Lane Lambert. and Casey Cizikas jumps to his defense and tells the fans not to come. That doesn't go over well. But, I mean, the point is, like, we're starting to wonder about Lane Lambert here with the New York Islanders. And if the Islanders end up making a decision on Lane Lambert, and who knows, I mean, they have an extended road trip here. Interestingly, they'll take him to Vancouver, Bo Horvat, on Wednesday. I would suspect that one of the first phone calls that Lou Lamoriello would probably make would be Jay Woodcroft. Like, there are a lot of nervous coaches out there. Everyone knows how good a coach Jay Woodcroft is. And he's one of those guys that you say he'll be unemployed as long as he wants to be unemployed. But as far as what job number two is now, it's stop the bleeding. You know, they've squandered all the bad games that they can have. You know, every top team is allowed, you know, a certain number of clunkers, of bad games every year. Edmonton's used them all up. I don't want to say they have to play perfect hockey all the way through now to get to the playoffs to try to do something here, but pretty close to it. Like, they can't have losing streaks. They can't have bad games against teams they have to beat. So the first thing you need to do is stop the losing. Stop giving up the high-quality chances. I think that the net mining situation is one that still needs to be addressed. I know that Ken Holland talked to Jack Campbell before he sent him down to Bakersfield and essentially said, look, there's still a path for you to get back up here. There's still a way for you to get back to the Edmonton Oilers. And that's a great message for someone like Jack Campbell. Stuart Skinner's in his sophomore season as well. I still think that trying to find a goaltender, and it's hard to find one right now, folks, trying to find a goaltender has to be high on their priority list as well. But they need to string some wins together. I think health is an issue. I don't know. You know, last week we talked about Connor McDavid going to Lourdes to get all healed up to go and play in the Heritage Classic game, you know, bathe in holy water. But Matthias Ekholm is not 100%. Connor McDavid is not 100%. And, you know, the interesting thing about that, Justin, is now the Edmonton Oilers this season know what it's like when Connor McDavid can't outscore you and erase all of your mistakes. Like, there was a time, ever since McDavid has essentially been there, we haven't really seen all the warts on the Edmonton Oilers, because at the end of it, Connor jumps over the boards, he ends up scoring 4 points on the night, and the Oilers win, and then we're talking about how great this team is. We've always wondered, what happens without Connor McDavid? What happens if you don't have the savior jumping over the boards? And we're seeing it now. We're seeing all the shallow areas of the Edmonton Oilers because they don't have Connor McDavid to jump over the boards and outscore the other team. So depth is an issue, tightening up the defense, goaltending. So just a couple of tiny little tweaks, Justin. Nothing major at all here.
Monday Night Hockey tonight, Islanders and Oilers will be the beginning of the new era. 8:30 p.m., we have that one on Sportsnet. Okay, let's move over to the Maple Leafs. Of course, this weekend felt like the Brad Trey Living sweepstakes. The night, you got to see both sides of his hand in the GM role. Zadorov, though, has become a trending topic in Toronto. Apparently, players on the team went up to him and said, you're exactly what we need in Toronto. I don't know how true that is, but nonetheless, how much are they kicking tires on him? How real of a possibility is it that we see that Calgary Flame become a Maple Leaf?
It's real. I mean, they are definitely interested. I was, you know, talking to Elliot about that comment as well and trying to figure out who it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, I look at that 2014 London Knights team, and Max Domi's the leading scorer on that team. A 16-year-old Mitch Marner is on that team. I wonder if it's one of those two. Just as a side note, I cannot get this memory out of my head. I was working that Memorial Cup. That was the first Memorial Cup that I worked. And I remember talking to Zadorov in the London Knights dressing room, and no matter what we tried to talk to him about, all he wanted to talk about was this new pair of Prada shoes that he had bought. He's like, the guy's like way into shoes and fashion and all of it. Like, here's this like hulking blue liner who just wants to talk about his style of shoes. But nonetheless, the interest is legitimate. I would have to think, though, that there are a number of teams that would be interested in the services of Nikita Zadorov. I mean, everybody wants to leave a bruise now. And, you know, everybody saw how Vegas won the Stanley Cup. Big, strong defenseman that can defend. And so players like Nikita Zadorov are very much in demand. So listen, I think we've talked about this a couple of different times, guys. Like, the one thing that Brad Treliving wants to do here with the Maple Leafs is redo the blue line. I think he'd like to have Zadorov. I also think he'd like to have Chris Tanev as well. These are the style of defensemen I think he wants to populate the Maple Leafs blue line. So is the interest legit? Absolutely. I just don't think that the Maple Leafs would be the only team interested in said blue liner.
So Leafs off the ice in terms of games for the next little while in Sweden, of course, Global Series. Where would you like to see that head next? And then side note, are they going to sign William Nylander while they're over there just to make this a whole Swedish masterpiece or what?
Are you ready to get up to watch the Maple Leafs play 8 a.m. on Sunday? Yes. Are you ready for breakfast NHL?
It's kind of fun. Why not?
I love it. Like, I love, like, we're getting some 2 o'clock starts. We got Saturday, we got an 11 a.m. start. Sunday morning, we got an 8 a.m. start. I love it. I think it's, I think it's wonderful. I mean, we've seen, I mean, the NHL has gone now to Australia. The NHL has gone to China as well. I think that, you know, I'd like to see, we've seen team go to Germany. We've seen in Switzerland. You know, I think that, you know, all the popular obvious places have kind of been done, but that's okay. There is one place, actually, now that you mention it, and I really liked when they did this, and I thought that the visuals were great. Do you guys recall when the Los Angeles Kings and the Anaheim Ducks played at O2 Arena in London, England? Like, and it was like the coolest looking crowd because there's no home team. There's no home player to cheer for, unlike, you know, in Australia, Jordan Spence. Like, it was so cool seeing a rink where, like, every person had a different jersey on. And I just loved it. I thought the rink was gorgeous. I thought the fans looked great. And they brought, like, a soccer style to the event as well. I'm very much team O2 Arena in England. Let's go back there with the NHL. That's where I would go.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. Sweden sounds pretty good, that's too. Cool. It should be a great atmosphere. Sweden, yeah, you can't really miss with Sweden. Hall of Fame weekend, Hall of Fame night, run on goaltenders this year with the Hockey Hall of Fame. Do you have something that sticks out when you look at this class, Merrick?
Where's Lauren Chabot? If we're putting goaltenders in, damn it. I'm not in the minority on this one. Anyone who follows hockey history, we all sort of knock our heads against the wall and say, when is Lauren Chabot going to finally get in the Hockey Hall of Fame? And as one person from the voting class told me, Jeff, we love Lauren Chabot, but no one here saw him play. Like, I understand there is historical oversight. I think we need to look back as well. I'm happy that the goaltenders are good. Like, there's the way that I look at it, Justin, is there's two places where the NHL was like, sorry. There's two places where the Hockey Hall of Fame has fallen down. One is with goaltenders, and it looks like they're starting to address that now. And the other is defensive defensemen. Like, there are some, whether it's, you know, Rod Langway goes in, Kevin Lowe went in recently. But if you look at the history of defensive defensemen, they don't tend to get in, like, at all. You have to put up points or you're not getting into the Hall of Fame as a blue liner. Like, personally, I look at a guy like Adam Foote. And I say to myself, for what he did and what he meant to those Stanley Cups and how good he was consistently defending, and now we're getting a sense of, because every team in the NHL now wants players that can defend, you know, we look at that style and say, hang on a second here, why is this not represented in the Hockey Hall of Fame? I still think there should be more women. Caro goes in, awesome, one of the greatest players of all time. That's an area that's finally getting addressed. Not as significantly as I think some people would like, but still. But as far as positions go, goaltending and defensive defensemen, those have always been the two areas where I've looked at and said, yeah, the Hall of Fame really needs to do something here. And did I mention that Lauren Chabot should be in, Justin? Has that come up yet? Have I mentioned Lauren Chabot yet?
We just looked him up. Born October 5th, 1900. His career ended in 1937, so definitely someone that I saw play was my favorite goaltender. Was
that's why
he?
They call you the hockey hipster.
That's
Jeff.
The hipster take right there.
Well, I couldn't resist. Did I mention Lauren Chabot should be in?
Yeah,
We'll
start pushing Lauren Chabot for next year. Jeff, we appreciate it. Merrick Mondays, we're crowning these when you can come on. We like them.
I'm in.
All right, perfect.
I'll try to get at least one hipster reference in every week. Lauren Chabot is this week.
Perfect. Okay. Thanks, Jeff. Enjoy the night. We'll chat next week.
Hey, Ambrose signed a contract.
Oh, yeah, she did. Yeah, looking good. 3 years in Montreal.
That's it.
That's our favorite team. That's our favorite team, quietly. Okay.
Not supposed to cheer for teams, but go Montreal.
Yeah, there we go. Jeff Merrick of the Jeff Merrick Show and 32 Thoughts, the podcast. Thanks, Jeff. Lauren Chabot, not sure if he's on Bet Rivers tonight. But that's so funny. Yeah, he's born in 1900.
Let's fast forward and go back to what 1997, I guess, with Connor McDavid, 97 years after Lauren Chabot. You know, he can say all of he wants, right? And they can say, hey, this is Jeff Jackson, whatever. Do we not find out tonight on Sportsnet 830 Isles and Oilers how involved Connor McDavid was? I mean, even if it wasn't him knocking down the door, banging on it, saying we need to change here, McDavid has one assist in his last five games. When is the last time we've seen Connor McDavid have a one assist in five game run? He was not playing well.
Never.
He has not been playing well. I know he might be banged up, but if he's shot out of a cannon tonight, same with Leon Draisaitl, who has 2 points in the last five games. If those two look the part, are completely different guys, does that not suggest they were kind of waiting for something to happen?
I think.
And if you're waiting for something to happen, maybe you have some sort of involvement, or you just didn't find out via text.
It's certainly going to be the game for me to watch tonight. We've got the 8:30 Monday Night Hockey, Islanders in Edmonton, a new era with Chris Knobloch, and however that impacts Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, we will see. Okay, we're going to take a look at some lines tonight. Bet now, time now for Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance. Big Raptors game tonight. They're back home. Scotty Barnes has been the bright spot for the Toronto Raptors all season long. I'm going to put him for over 34.5 points, assists, and rebounds on Bet Rivers tonight. It's a big one against a team that is not very good, so I think that that's going to bode well. And I just saw that OG is going to be out tonight, and Gary Trent Jr. OG cut his finger doing household chores yesterday. So that's just more touches for Scotty. I have no idea what that was. We can ask Katie Heindel which household chore you cut your finger on, other than probably washing the dishes. But that's going to be my pick tonight, Scotty Barnes over points, assists, and rebounds.
Yeah, I think that definitely helps your bet. If Scotty Barnes has to play a little bit more because two rotation pieces are out, he might be able to collect those late-game rebounds to push him over that number. I am going to assume that McDavid and Draisaitl are a little bit incentivized, we'll call it, after the coaching change, that they play better, that they've saved one of their best efforts for a new coach and someone that at least McDavid has a lot of familiarity with, dating back to the Erie Otters of the Ontario Hockey League. So I'm going to bet both McDavid and Draisaitl at +510 to score 2+ goals.
Okay.
If one of them goes off, we profit majorly. If they both go off, we just, you know, we retire at +510 apiece. I just feel like one of these guys, I mean, if they have a good offensive night, which I do think is possible, that one of these guys is due for a big game. McDavid and Draisaitl both +510 to score twice. We'll go after it.
Do you think the fact that Knobloch switched them up and put them on separate lines in pregame skate will mean anything for tonight?
It's probably not the best thing for playing them.
Just giving you that tidbit.
But I do think they'll find each other many times on Oiler power plays.
There you go.
And that'll help us out just a little bit.
All right. Well, that was Between the Lines, brought to you by Bet Rivers. Take a chance. We'll chat with Katie Heindel about the Toronto Raptors tonight, back in action. Pretty brutal loss to end their road trip. There was a bit of a unwritten rule broken by the Celtics. I don't know if you saw that, but they used the coach's challenge to protest the call, up 27 points with less than 4 minutes left in the game. I think that that's not allowed. I don't like that. I think that's it's a bit gutty.
Yeah, it definitely goes against code, I would say. Unwritten rules of basketball. I think Dennis Schroeder came out and said as much. I do like that they reacted, though. I like how Darko was angry. Darko was getting that Nick Nurse red face on, but just towards someone else other than someone on his own team. That sort of stuff can be somewhat galvanizing if you're a group, if you're angry together. Like, we've seen that with Mark Giordano. You think the Leafs had fun Saturday night after a couple fights and a win? Like, maybe that helps soothe a loss just a little bit when you can get mad together at the Boston Celtics with your new coach. I'm trying to find a silver lining, but I think there is one there.
My silver lining is that they're also going to play each other again Friday for the first in-season tournament game. So Raptors are already a little pissed off because of what the Celtics did in that game. I think it bodes well for that big in-season tournament cup, which we don't know what it's called yet.
Yeah, we're still working on the name, right?
It's just the cup.
Or maybe the Raptors find that as their Super Bowl and they save a good effort for that one.
Okay, we'll have Katie Heindel after the break, Gene Principe to end our show. We'll be back on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's the Fan pregame with Ailish and Justin.
breaking down the top stories in hockey, and Elliot Friedman every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan Pregame Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 Fan. Ailish and Justin, Raptors hit the court 7:30 p.m. on Sportsnet 1 against Washington. We're getting breaking news that OG is out due to a finger cut doing household chores yesterday, per the team. We were trying to brainstorm a couple of household chores that you'd be doing in November if you were an NBA player making millions of dollars, and I can't think of many household chores.
We came up with none.
Like, what would OG be doing that he hasn't? Maybe he's a guy that's like, I'm not hiring anyone to do my business, but you think he's meal prepping himself? Not really.
Yeah, maybe we're selling OG short. Maybe NBA players do take care of themselves. You know, that Tommy DeVito who just like has his mother do everything for him. That didn't go over well online. But the only one that I think makes sense is potentially wrapping holiday gifts. Get
that's
the scissors
early.
Out.
That's
get the tape
real
out,
early,
a little
man.
Sharp edge on the tape.
You said meal prep. I thought that was a good one. Maybe opening a box. Like you use like... You know,
Amazon order
yes,
comes in.
You use like
yeah,
a knife accidentally. You go, you know, through the tape too aggressively.
Something tells me OG won't be forthright about it.
You're
what
washing,
exactly happened?
Like you're washing dishes in the sink and you reach in because it's bubbly and, you know, you grab a...
Yeah, it's possible.
I don't know.
The knife that he hasn't been used, so it's as sharp as possible.
We'll never know. Maybe OG would. He wouldn't. He won't tell us. That's all we'll know. Katie Heindel joins us. Basketball Feeling Substack. Of course, you can get her stuff there. It's always great. Katie, thanks for coming on. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
Any
also
insight on OG's finger?
Yeah, as someone who recently cut their finger, the top of their finger open on like the bottom of a pot, I was like, wow. Okay, is he like? He's not planting.
He could have a green thumb.
He could be gardening.
Yeah. He could have a green thumb.
I have a late submission.
Yeah.
He's big on scarves, right? Sewing machine?
No.
Has he got like a side hustle? OG scarves?
He's got an Etsy page and he's just making like homemade stuff for the holidays. I don't know. That might be
OG's
tough.
Etsy page. Yeah, that I think that would make work.
All right. So Raptors back home after a lengthier road trip, but a tough loss to end it nonetheless. But feels like they're coming home with some optimism, some positivity, maybe more than expected. The pulse around this team now that we're here and we're focusing on Raptors for the next couple of days, Maple Leafs out of town, feels like it's a pretty good vibe right now.
It does feel good. I don't know. It's so early in the season that like I have a really hard time getting into any of the like doom and gloom scenarios. The like quote, like this team's a failure already. Like we got to talk about the coach. Like we will talk about these things. We don't have to. Like nothing is in dire straits yet. But I don't know. A road trip like that's always a good way to kind of test their new muscles, test out the new schemes. Like okay, we're going to be a pass first team. What does that actually look like on the road when like other teams' defenses start to try and figure us out. Overall, I think it was a pressure test. And, I mean, they could have come out worse. I think that's, like, maybe going to be my main takeaway from this team this season. It could have been worse.
that's one way to put it. I mean, it would be hard to be better, I think, for Scotty Barnes if we're going the promising route. I mean, there are obvious things that have changed. There are obvious things that have improved. There are obvious things that are like, hey, there's nothing really Darko Rajakovic can do about this. But Scotty is definitely front and center when we're talking about positive change. In your mind, Katie, like, what has changed most for the better? Like, what's the driving force behind Scotty turning over a new leaf or turning a new leaf under Rajakovic? And what ways has he improved for you or shown the most promise for you to start here?
I think it's in his confidence. And I think that confidence to me really speaks to the direction that he's been given. Like so many times last season, and we talked about it a ton, it just looked like he didn't really know where he was supposed to be. Like what his assignments were, like what were the expectations of him and like any given rotation on the floor. He just looked a little lost, right, all the time. And that's really not been the case so far this season. Like he looks incredibly confident, whether that's like putting up 20 plus shots a game, whether that's, you know, not shying away from contact, being kind of up around the rim. I think him and OG Anunoby have looked so good together in this kind of new level of a partnership, or like the chemistry between them has been so kind of cool to see. And I'm not going to lie, it's kind of nice to see him chirping at, that was in the Knicks game. I'm trying to, now I'm blanking on who it was, but he was, you know, he's had a couple like back and forths. Mm-hmm. with guys around the league this season so far. And again, like, maybe we're a bit like, oh no, what happened to Sweet Scotty? Like, he's still there, but this is also the next evolution of that guy.
Maybe he's the dog that Pat Bev didn't think we had. He's chirping away. He's showing he's got a little bit of spice to him. We'll take it. I guess one of the burning questions regarding Scotty was Pascal and how they're going to either coexist or not. Have you found yourself getting closer to either finding the answer to that or finding that the answer is that there is no answer and that maybe that will be the parting ways? Not to make this doom and gloom, but I think this is going to be the main storyline until the trade deadline comes around, if they can coexist.
I mean, it was always going to be an adjustment, I think, in terms of, you know, Darko Rakovic, like, pass first offense. That hasn't always been a strong suit for Pascal Siakam, and it's definitely coming into sharper clarity this season. But I'll go back to what I said before. I do really think it's too soon to say that the two of them are going to be at odds all season, that they can't find a middle ground, that they can't, like, kind of both be on the floor and create a better kind of product together. Pascal has, the ways he hasn't looked great to me are the things that I feel like I always kind of repeat myself with him. There's a bit of trepidation. There's a bit of confusion. And I mean, to me, it's like he's too far along in his career to look that way. Or to be acting that way or just kind of think that way. So again, that I think that might just be growing pains and getting used to kind of like looking to somebody like Scotty Barnes when the two of them are out there together. But I don't think this has to be like a one or the other scenario. And like, that's something that I always get so confused about in any NBA discourse. It's like, it doesn't have to be like inherently limited. Mm-hmm. We can have, if not at all, we can have more than just like one guy, you know, like there's room for both of them. That would obviously be the ideal, along with OG Anunoby and Jakob Poeltl, you know, and all the great things that we've seen going on between everybody. So again, a little too soon, I think.
Chatting with Katie Heindel of the Basketball Feelings Substack. So you mentioned the record. You mentioned, you know, it's in the end with a couple losses and a couple wins. And the losses coming against teams that they are very familiar with and that might just flat out be better than them, in the Philadelphia 76ers and the Boston Celtics. In those games, Katie, did you see them revert back to their old ways? And, you know, because Darko wants this to be different. Darko wants and strives for team basketball, for things to be different than they have been. But when push comes to shove and they start getting, you know, they start losing to teams like Philadelphia and Boston, have you seen them revert back to their old ways? And if so, how have you seen that?
Probably the main way. And to your point, Justin, yeah, those two teams are very good and like have come out very hot, you know, this season, as I think anybody could have told you they would have. But I think it's the pressure that teams like that are going to put the team under, and that it makes sense to me why they would kind of buckle or fold under that, or, you know, parts of their schemes would be a little bit exposed, is because they're really not all that solidified yet. You know, I think this was like in the dregs of their really early kind of slump, but like Jakob Poeltl had said, you know, it feels like we're just trying to make something happen all the time. And when everybody's trying to make something happen, nobody is making something happen. And, you know, other teams can capitalize on that, who can really like pinpoint the weaknesses in the team's offense, which is still mostly at the half court. So those kinds of things, yes, it doesn't feel great to see them still prominent. But again, I didn't think those things were going to go away overnight. But they're also kind of punching above their weight in some cases, right? Like, they beat the Mavs pretty handily. That felt like a good win. Like, there have been good wins along the way. So to lose against a team like the Sixers, which, like, Tyrese Maxey is incredibly just, like, vivacious in every single way you'd want him to be on the floor right now. That team is completely bounced back from being James Harden-less. It's not the worst thing. It's good to kind of look at losses like that against, like, opponents you want to play to, and have the Raptors think, okay, like, if we can get to that level, we might actually be able to eke out some wins against these guys.
Okay, let's get to tonight. I mean, the Wizards are pretty bad, 2-7 on the season, but we mentioned and we joked about it, OG Anunoby being out. I mean, it's not ideal against any opponent. So how does OG being out complicate matters? We've talked about the partnership between OG and Scotty. what do the Raptors do now? Like, what is the repercussion of losing OG against the Wizards?
It's probably not great. Like, I want to give the Wizards, yeah, you're right, not a great team, but I feel bad not giving them any credit whatsoever. I think Kyle Kuzma has been such a great, like, shooting and kind of like all around bit of a Swiss Army knife ad for them. And he's shown that again this season. I guess that list is pretty short because I'll end it there. If you don't have somebody like OG on the floor, you do lose a bit of size and you're going to lose some of the defensive capabilities, I think, of the team. If they can just kind of keep things fast against the Wizards and disorganize them, I think the Raptors have a pretty good chance of winning this and evening out their record, like 5-5. Like, that would be such a nice takeaway from a game like this. But honestly, like, the biggest silver lining of this is it gives Rakovich some more room for experimentation. Like, if he genuinely wants like a 10-man lineup and a 10-man rotation, it's kind of the best time to lean into that. Granted, yeah, the bench is still a bit thin. There are other injuries there and other guys out, but I'd like to see him reach into his bag of tricks, aka the deep end of the bench, and see what he can put together.
We'll be nice to have them back at home, nonetheless. We got them on Sportsnet 1 tonight, 7:30 p.m., Washington and Toronto. Katie, we appreciate you coming on. Always great to catch up and enjoy tonight's action.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
No problem. Katie Heindel, Basketball Feelings Subsection, also writing a book. Check out her Twitter page. Lots of good stuff coming from Katie. We got that game, Sportsnet 1, of course, 7:30. Yeah, the Wizards are not a good team, but Raptors are losing a couple bigger pieces here tonight with no Trent, no OG. I still think that they can handle this pretty easily.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, there are no excuses against the Wizards, no excuses being down a couple guys, regardless of the team, really. And the Raptors are still sort of finding their way under Darko Rajakovic. They've had some good wins. They've had some predictable losses, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But this is a game you expect to win against the Wizards. But without OG, it makes it a little bit more difficult. I mean, this is a guy who's been lauded once again for his defensive work, guarding every position. The stats would show that he should be considered among the Defensive Player of the Year candidates. OG not being available because of a cut finger is going to hurt you against any team, really.
Raptors got a big week ahead, though. So tonight, Wizards, Wednesday night, sorry, the Bucks in town again, the Celtics in town Friday night. It's those are some big ones in a quick turnaround, a Monday, Wednesday, Friday game. Friday is the first in-season tournament game. So big stakes there. But these are some big opponents. Maybe tonight is a night where you get a lead and you rest some of your players. You allow them to get some touches, as Katie was saying, deep down the bench. Mm-hmm. As you got a big one Wednesday, you got a big one Friday as well. Yeah, Raptors. It'd be nice to talk some Raptors this week. It's been like a while, I feel like, since we've had the Leafs out of the picture for a bit. We got some Raptors to really focus in on. So, I mean, this is the thing with the Raptors. It's like, what do we expect, right? They went on this road trip and they lost to good teams, right? It's like, okay.
And they beat a good team.
They did, so.
And they beat a Spurs team that has a lot to be excited about. Like, it was not fun. A disastrous road trip by any stretch of the imagination. But you are reminded when you play the 76ers. You are reminded when you play the Celtics that, you know, the Raptors are still in that second or third tier, if you want to call it that, in the Eastern Conference.
They just win the in-season tournament.
You're so fired up for the in-season.
I can't wait. I want to see the new court. You know, but Raptors going to have their new court debut on Friday. It's kind of like black and gold.
I was almost blinded, classic, I think, by the Bucks court. It was
there are some crazy courts.
Yeah, there are.
Somebody had one the other day, and it was like baby blue with bright yellow. I couldn't even see the ball. They're going to need to have different color balls for some of these courts because it was blending in.
Don't
poorly.
Give them ideas. They're going to have a different color ball for the in-season tournament.
They got new jerseys as well. There's lots going on. So we got that tonight on Sportsnet 1. 8:30 tonight, we've got Islanders and Edmonton Oilers. The beginning of this new era. You had a great point that you think maybe we see a reinvigorated McDavid, a reinvigorated Draisaitl. But if we don't see that tonight, and the Islanders aren't like nothing, they've got about a .500 record. I don't know. Like, what's the vibe check tomorrow if the Oilers drop this game tonight and they don't look like they've learned anything? They don't look like they've been, you know, woken up at any sense to lose your head coach when some of the players said they were surprised. I feel like this is a really important game to just set the tone again.
Yeah, and it's not the easiest team, as you mentioned, to set the tone against. I mean, if the Islanders are anything, the Islanders are a good defensive team. Yep. And things might not be going perfectly there, but you're right. They don't give you much. But if it looks like the Oilers we expected, then you're going to be like, oh, that's what was going on. And we've seen the Edmonton Oilers not so long ago, pre-Jay Woodcroft, which was not long ago, about a year and a half, kind of protesting with their play. Like, they were awful under Dave Tippett for about the last month. They make a change, and then they're the best team in the NHL through the rest of the regular season. Like, the Oilers, and more specifically, Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, have done this before. I would not be shocked to see them play really, really well tonight. The two individuals play really well tonight, and everybody else play really well tonight, because there is something reinvigorating about getting a new coach. There is, like, the dead coach bounce, which generally teams get, but this team is not any other team. This is the team that most people at this network were picking to win the Stanley Cup. They have the talent.
50% of them, to be true.
They have the talent to be more than just a team that gets a little bounce after they go through a coaching change. Like, they could turn into something that would be considered the opposite of what they were under Jay Woodcroft, because they have the talent in that room.
You know what we didn't talk about at all with Merrick? We didn't get a minute, but Ken Holland and all this. Like, I mean, it's not out of the question to say that they fired the wrong person. Ken Holland has been at the table making the decisions, putting this team together. This is his third head coach in 4.5 years as GM of the Edmonton Oilers. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of different coaches coaching Connor McDavid. I mean, I think Ken Holland, I know there's like, I don't know if it's confirmed or not, rumors that he's going to retire after this year. Is that why they're, you know, waiting to just let him go off in his own way? Like, if that needs to be the change, then that needs to be the change. I hope they're not just saving face by keeping Ken Holland around because he's going to retire, right?
Yeah, I mean,
why wasn't he fired?
I kind of see it the other way. I mean, this is a Hall of Famer who has made good moves for this team.
I understand that.
But, I mean, firing Ken Holland and embarrassing Ken Holland doesn't really get you anywhere, right?
Did firing Jay Woodcroft literally make sense on paper, though, fully?
It could, because that could change what actually happens on the
ice. It's the easiest thing to do.
Firing Ken Holland, it does nothing unless someone's going to come in and make a massive sweeping move, trade Leon Draisaitl, trade Darnell. Like, there's nothing you can do. You kind of have to lie in the bed that Ken Holland made in a lot of ways. So whatever you can do to make things better, well, that's at a more like granular level with what you do tactically or what you do systematically. So I feel like that's the reason. There's clearly a transitional period happening where Jeff Jackson's running the show, even though Ken Holland is the general manager. And to be fair to Ken Holland, I've been really critical of what he's done because I felt like the creativity that other teams have shown to bring in talent was not there. But then he started kind of taking on some creative means. He got Evander Kane with the Oilers for a long-term, semi-long-term, for way under market value for Evander Kane.
He's never given them a good goaltender.
The Connor Brown Brown contract was somewhat creative. He's found a way to get decent players in. Matthias Ekholm was a really good add. It's just the goaltending bugaboo that you mentioned. Like, he ultimately, his failure, if there is a failure, is that Ken Holland couldn't bring a goaltender that could kind of fix everything for this team.
All right, let's bring in our boots on the ground, Gene Principe, joining us, Edmonton Sportsnet reporter. Gene, thanks for coming on. Look at that stash. It's looking great.
I know.
We're up close and personal.
Yeah. I know. When someone says, I know.
Well, and sorry, I'm not exactly giving you the best parts of Rogers Place here. This is just the trunk area where I just...
It looks good.
Yeah, you got it, Justin and Ailish. I had a chance to just view some of my material for tonight's game, and I'm still getting used to saying Chris instead of Jay.
It's Chuck.
It's been a wacky season. It feels like it should be about February by now. And, you know, a good man lost his job, two good men, including Dave Manson, longtime NHLer. But in the sports world, patience is not for everyone. And when you don't think you're achieving what you feel like this team should be achieving, you start to do things. And so something big was done, and we wait to see now how everyone responds.
Okay, so what do we know about Chris Knobloch? We know he coached Connor McDavid. We know Jeff Jackson likes Chris Knobloch a lot. But in terms of, like, on-ice change that we may see going from Jay Woodcroft to Chris Knobloch, do we have any insight there, Gene?
Well, Justin, it is early, as they say, but he did speak of accountability. He said that's maybe the most difficult part about being a coach is, you know, we've seen around the NHL, Jonathan Huberdeau sat for a period. We've seen Johnny Gaudreau sit for not quite a period, but about 16 minutes in Columbus. And people want players, if they make mistakes, or should I put make mistakes over and over again, especially if it's the same one, to pay some kind of price. And currency, ice time is usually what a coach has at his disposal. Chris was quite clear in saying, yes, you want to do it, but you also can't put fear into your players that if they make a mistake, they're wondering, am I going to be benched? And also it prevents them from trying things because there is the concern that if they make a mistake, they might miss a shift or a period or be a healthy scratch. He also spoke about defense. He says he's a fan of being like a zone defense for the Edmonton Oilers, but he wants to really push the pace and push the puck forward and get the puck into the hands of some of the best forwards in the NHL. And I think the Oilers situation was split in two. Going into Seattle, they'd only won two games so far this season. And also from a standpoint of watching Connor and Leon, they have had struggles. I don't want to say slump when you talk about two guys like that, but they've had struggles, but never together at the same time for this long. It's the strangest thing I've seen when it comes to those two guys. I can't believe this when I see their numbers, and they're fine for many NHLers, but not for those two. And Connor McDavid was quite honest today, saying, listen, we got to be better, and it starts with me. These aren't players that are shunning their duties. In fact, if you read body language and just try to sort of read between the lines, those two guys were quite taken aback by the decision. I think Edmonton has had numerous coaching changes in the past, but this one seemed to really sting. I don't know if it was because it was a surprise or maybe because of, just the lack of results that led to it, but we wait to see. It's early in a season to change coaches. I remember once Denny Savard was let go, I think six games or four games in, Hall of Famer with the Chicago Blackhawks. They brought on a guy named Joel Quenneville, who went on to have success, on the ice, winning Stanley Cup. So I don't know. I don't know what we're going to see, but Chris certainly seems like a different kind of coach than Jay.
Last one for Eugene. I know you got to run. Looks like he's splitting up 97 and 29 tonight. Maybe that's the fix, but either way, are we going to see how these two respond to a new coach and whether that was, something that they had known or not known, but nonetheless, like tonight is a really big, I guess, prove it night for those two.
Oh, you know what it is. And it's weird to say they've got Hart trophies. They've got Art Ross trophies. They've won tons of awards already, those two young guys, and they are the basis of the franchise, the foundation for sure. But I think if anything, they want to prove it, not to themselves, but they want to show like they're racehorses, right? And they're ready to run, get them out of the gate, get going. And it's somewhat of a fresh start. I mean, the record doesn't change. It's not like they go to 0-0-0. The record is still the same, but there's a lot on the line for this entire organization. I heard you talking about Jeff Jackson. He comes in. I love what Jeff said yesterday. He said, they brought me in to win a cup this year, like not in 4 years, not in 3 years, like this year. Like soon. So I think that was the basis of the eventual decision. And it was interesting to hear that right from game one, when they lost 8-1, that the conversations were going on just to kind of gauge where everyone was at and everything was at. So, I thank Jay Woodcroft and Dave Manson, two great guys, and I still think really good coaches. But now another guy has a chance to prove what he can do, just like Jay had the chance a little less than 2 years ago to take over from Dave Tippett. It's the circle of coaching life. It's just what happens, unfortunately.
Well, all eyes on you tonight. Monday Night Hockey, we'll see you guys later. Yes. Edmonton and New York Islanders at 8:30 p.m. Thanks for joining us today, and enjoy tonight. It's going to be a good one.
Anytime. Take care.
Thanks so much. Gene Principe, Sportsnet reporter, of course, for Edmonton. We've got Monday Night Hockey, Islanders and Oilers, the beginning of a new era. That's up on Sportsnet at 8:30.
Yeah, it's a big one. Very excited for this one. See how those two react. They won over the weekend. They beat the Seattle Kraken pretty handedly, but it wasn't because of 97 and 29. Zach, I'm a natural hat trick. It was because of everybody else. And maybe that complicated the weekend a little bit because you're thinking, hey, does Woodcroft have life? I mean, that was a pretty inspired first period, at least. The one that I watched was pretty impressive for the Oilers. But they made the decision anyway, and now they got to stand by that decision with Jeff Jackson, Ken Holland, Connor McDavid, whoever was involved. They got to stand by it, and it begins tonight on Monday Night Hockey.
All right, we got a big one. Oilers, Islanders, 8:30. You've got Toronto Raptors back home against Washington. That's 7:30 on Sportsnet 1. It's going to be a big night across the network. We'll be back tomorrow, Tuesday. Leafs out of action all week long, so we got lots of Raptors and NHL to whip through. We'll be back tomorrow night, everyone. Have a great one.